Today's show is brought to you by Underbrush, a new thriller by Kevin Carr. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, we're going to go out to the Old West with the Magnificent Seven, fly in the air with the Storks, go to the hospital with the Hollers, get into the computer with IT, and then go crazy with Demon and Rob Zombie's 31. I'll also be talking about the news, trailer park, box office predictions, and of course, the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Gonna start off with some sad news. Curtis Hanson, who's best known for directing movies like L.A. Confidential, 8 Mile, and The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. He was a huge filmmaker, especially in the 90s, had some of the more influential movies and more respected movies. Like something like L.A. Confidential was extremely respected. Curtis Hanson, he died earlier this week on September 20th of natural causes. He was 71 years old. He will be missed. There's still some movies of his that I have to catch up on. And one of them actually is one that was recommended to me almost a year ago. So I'm going to have to check that out. I'm so behind on my recommendations, and time to catch up on some of his filmography. Another piece of news, which is not nearly as sad as this, but well, maybe sad if you're into tabloids. Apparently Angelina Jolie has filed for divorce from Brad Pitt, which I don't care. I don't care. Celebrities break up all the time. And the fact that people thought that there was true love, this was the guy who had true love with Jennifer Aniston and then broke up with her to bang Angelina Jolie, who has a history of volatile and insane relationships. I mean, do you remember some of the stuff? Vials of blood and waking people up in other hotel rooms when Billy Bob Thornton and her were married and the sex was so loud. Angelina Jolie does not seem like the most stable person to have a relationship with. And people are like, oh, well, it's different now because she's matured. You know, apparently they're breaking up. They were married for 2 years. They were together for like 10, but they were married for 2 years. Do you think it had anything to do with the gut punch failure of By the Sea last year? I mean, it made barely over $500,000 in total for a $14 million movie. One of the things I've noticed, and this is cynicism talking, because like I said, I don't care about Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt, but the thing is everybody else seems to, and that's kind of what's fascinating about it. I have an AP app, Associated Press app on my phone, and I went to the entertainment section, which I usually just go to the news if I want to check news, because entertainment, I'm kind of got my ear to the ground anyways for that. But I swear to God, they had like five stories. Five separate stories on Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt breaking up. And on top of it, one of the stories was other celebrities react on Twitter, which are the laziest, stupid stories you'll ever see. It's literally just some journalist goes out and searches Twitter for these names and then, or just goes to these celebrity sites and, oh, look, Kim Kardashian tweeted about Angelina Jolie. Who cares what Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt are doing? And who cares what Kim Kardashian has to say about that? But one of the things I've noticed when you have celebrity couples, they always break up, first of all. They always do. Very rarely do you get the Bogey and Bacalls, but their breakups tend to center near or around the failure of some big movie. So you look at Guy Ritchie and Madonna, and they did that Swept Away, and that killed their career and their love life. Kim Basinger and Alec Baldwin, they couldn't stay together. They couldn't make a movie to save their life. They were all terrible. And then you have people like Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise, where suddenly when Nicole Kidman was suddenly becoming a little more popular than him, that's when the relationship was over. I do think that the New York Daily News' cover of Jennifer Aniston laughing was silly and immature, but again, who cares? And people are like, oh, but their kids may see this. By this point, those kids should know not to look at the news when there's something going on with their family. Because they're celebrities. And their job is being a celebrity. And that's kind of why I'm not a big fan of celebrities. Because it's just being famous for being famous. Do something cool, like make movies, that's great. But, you know, just to be famous because you're famous. But this is what you get when you get narcissism from aging celebrities who get past the physical beauty commodity. You have to admit, I mean, I'm sure Angelina Jolie is going to be looking for several more years, but she's on her way down. She has peaked from the beautiful standpoint. And Brad Pitt's getting there too. I mean, he's in his 50s. He's still going to be good looking probably well into his 60s, but at some point he's not, he's going to be the old guy. Another piece of news that I found interesting, two little pieces of news coming out from the executive's standpoint. Time Warner CEO Jeff Bukes admits that Suicide Squad could have been, quote, better on the creative. That Batman versus Superman and Suicide Squad, while they made money, both of them, Warner Brothers is very happy with the money they made, even though they weren't as profitable. They weren't the $1.5 billion each movies. But the fact that they're making $700 to $900 million each, that they're happy with that. But they're also aware that they didn't do a very good job from a storytelling standpoint, which is good. It's good to hear that because at least there's some internal workings of saying, hey, let's fix this narrative. Maybe not to duplicate what Marvel's doing, but to at least do a better job at it. So I found that interesting. And it's vindicating because they're also talking about how the tone of the DC movies are too dark. And I told you once, I got a big fight with this guy saying it's the tone, and the tone, it goes back to Nolan. Who helped pioneer that tone with the Dark Knight movies and then helping with a producing partner hand on Man of Steel to give this grim, black and white almost looking Superman movie. It's nice to see they're at least aware that there's a little bit of a problem there and they're going to be trying to fix it. We'll see if it gets fixed before Wonder Woman comes out. The next piece of interesting executive news is I think it was Bob Iger came out and made a comment about Rogue One basically downplaying its box office potential. Basically saying, hey, we're not expecting this to be The Force Awakens, and which is good, because you shouldn't. Because The Force Awakens is the kind of movie that comes out once every 10 years if you're lucky. I mean, it happened with Avatar, it happened with Titanic. These are monumentally powerful movies that have so much hype and so much excitement about them, you can't duplicate. You can't artificially create that. And I think they're looking at it and saying, this is going to be Ant-Man. This is going to be the Star Wars version of Ant-Man, or the Star Wars version of Thor. They're building the world here, and they're not expecting $900 million. They'd love that, but I think if Rogue One makes between $200 and $300 million domestically, I think they're going to be happy. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. First movie I want to talk about is Passengers. It opens on December 21st.
We boarded the Avalon with a destination. 120 years hibernation means we'll wake up in a new century on a new planet. But a year ago, everything changed. Do you know what's going on? Nobody else is awake.
I think something went wrong with the hibernation pods. We woke up too soon. 9 years too soon.
This looks like it has a lot of potential. It also looks like it could potentially be extremely boring. There's a lot of neat stuff that can happen, and there's a lot of cool things that you see in the trailer that it gives the impression that there's going to be action. Now, this could be something where it's like 2 hours of talking and 15 minutes of action. It looks good, but you can cut a good trailer from a crappy movie. We all know that. So keeping my fingers crossed for Passengers. The next one I want to talk about is Annabelle 2, which opens on May 19th.
Annabelle.
It's a bit of a cheat of a trailer. I mean, not much happens in the trailer, but I think that that's important because this shows what this new James Wan horror movie type of filmmaking gives you. A lot of atmosphere, a lot of sound, a lot of jump scares in terms of audio. I liked Annabelle. I didn't think it was as good as Conjuring, but I liked Annabelle, so I'm looking forward to this one. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Storks and IT. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. It is time to jump right into the movie reviews. We are going to take off with Storks. See what I did there? A mistake in the Stork warehouse causes a baby to need delivery by the super successful Stork and an orphan who grew up when she couldn't be delivered herself as a baby.
In the beginning, Storks delivered babies. Thank goodness we don't do that anymore. Now Storks deliver packages for cornerstore.com. The orphan tulip.
Oh, a tulip is just fine. Orphan hurts my heart.
Ah! There's one less baby to deliver.
This is a family that never got the baby they asked for.
If this baby finds her family, then maybe I can find mine.
All right, let's do it.
This movie is almost annoyingly high concept. I have talked about this on the radio, and I've been trying to explain it to a couple people. It takes a while to explain what this movie's about. It reminds me of the movie The Golden Compass, where you're like going, well, this happened, and this, there's no, like, you know, it's not like The Magnificent Seven, which comes out with a bunch of gunslingers are helping a town fight back against bad guys. Boom, there's the plot of The Magnificent Seven. Storks, not so much. There's a stork, he wants to be boss, but then they're delivering packages like Amazon drones now, and this kid who's like a teenager, so apparently they were delivering babies like 15 years ago, and now they got this teenager who's helping them out, and she's trying to find her family, and they end up creating a baby by the stork baby machine. It is so out there. And I remember I said last summer, when Inside Out came out, I said, Pixar has earned the right to make such a high concept movie. Cause that was out there. But even then you could boil it down. This little girl, the emotions in this little girl's head are trying to reconcile her own emotions on the outside. That's pretty easy to understand. It's very high concept. Up was another one that was very high concept. Guy puts balloons on a house, it flies away. But Storks is, it's out there. And I'm watching the movie going, is this what it's really about? They no longer deliver babies? But they used to, and I'm assuming like just like 15, 16 years ago, because the girl, and it looks like a teenager. I can respect something that's out there. You know what it reminds me of when I was thinking in terms of that sort of that annoying high concept? That movie about the turkeys a couple years ago that went back in time to the pilgrims to stop turkeys from being on the menu. That was really hard to wrap your brain around. I think that's part of the reason why that movie didn't do very well, because people are like, well, let's see the movie about the turkeys that go back in time because of a time machine. It's just weird. And this movie reminds me a little bit of another bird movie, which is Angry Birds, which came out earlier this summer. And the reason it reminds me of Angry Birds is because when the movie started to slow down with Angry Birds, and it was already forced as it is, but when the plot started to slow down, they just ramped it up and got more obnoxious. As opposed to what Pixar does, is they know it's okay to stop, slow down, have a tender moment, have some emotion. And that's what makes Pixar so good. Pixar can back off and have a slow moment. The problem with this movie is they don't have a strong enough story or characters to allow those moments to happen. It's extremely forced. It's extremely bizarre, and it's not because it's high concept. I can do high concept. It's just dumb, and it's obnoxious. In fact, when I was at my screening, there were a bunch of little kids there. Obviously, it's a kids' movie. So there are a ton of little kids there, And every now and then you hear go, blah, 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 blah. You hear all these noises. And I didn't know whether it was coming from the movie or not. Half the time, I didn't even notice. But if you have obnoxious kids that you just want to babble and yell and scream through a movie, take them to this because you won't notice them because the movie's loud and it makes no sense. I mean, it didn't even make sense in a cartoon way. It's not a very well done movie. It's quarter baked, maybe. it wasn't even half baked. And it's annoying and they have some funny gags. Fine. You can do some funny gags. It just doesn't work though. It doesn't hold together as a pragmatic film. So I'm going to have to say Storks kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about IT. This is a smaller film, and it stars Pierce Brosnan as a business tycoon whose company and family is targeted by an unstable IT professional.
Maybe you can come over to our house. Have a look at our internet.
Ed Porter, ma'am. I'm the IT guy.
You know, smart panels in your home have built-in cameras, right? I had them disabled. I like my privacy.
Good luck with that.
We have an issue. We've been hacked.
Polished man with a successful business and the perfect family. You're not the master of the universe, Mike.
We've seen these kind of movies before. It's a stalker movie. Reminds me a little bit of that Jennifer Lopez movie, The Boy Next Door. Only, I mean, they don't have sex. But this is directed by John Moore, who did A Good Day to Die Hard, and I think he did the Omen remake. He's not a bad director. I actually think he's okay. This movie just feels kind of like Storks, where it just doesn't quite fit together. Because he's this massive executive. I mean, he runs this airline company for like super rich people, like private jet company. And he just invites this guy to come in and work on his home networking system. And he puts him in as part of the lead IT guy in his company, where I'm like, there's no process of vetting this guy. There's no background checks. There's not even just to make sure there's no fingerprinting. And you're putting your company security. If you're going to get somebody to do IT, and I'm not talking about some guy just installing software here and there. I'm talking about this guy building the system for him. It just seemed a little silly. And on top of it, because once this guy then goes after him and he's unstable and he starts stalking him and he starts causing problems for him and hacking his system and hacking his smart house, which I'd never get a smart house. Why would anyone get a smart house? So who cares if the shower turns on by itself when you get it? I can turn on the shower myself. It's not that hard. I mean, the smart house idea is just inviting problems, I think. But not just because of privacy, but if something breaks down. So easy. You know, it's like an electric can opener versus just a manual can opener. Electric can opener has many points where you can break it down. A manual can opener, you know, as long as the hinge works, it's fine. So Pierce Brosnan is this sort of, he's this no-nonsense, hard-hitting business professional who just hires this guy just because he helped him out once. With no background check and no checks and balances and no other person to actually run his IT. Would you expect you'd have at least an army of people to do that? And then when this guy starts causing him problems, he just kind of flies off the handle and he's like yelling at him and he's calling him and he's threatening him. And I'm like, you don't get to that point in your life where you're that powerful and rich without at least knowing some people who can take care of a problem like that. Whether they're nefarious types or whether they're just lawyers. And he's like going to the cops and he's talking to this cliche detective who's at his desk eating his sandwich at his desk. I mean, the most cliche detective cop ever. I'm like, wait, he doesn't have lawyers? He doesn't have a team of lawyers on retainer, not just for the company, but his own personal lawyers to come in and go after the guy. It just seems so far-fetched. I mean, it's a neat idea. I've seen this kind of thing before and it works marginally okay, but it's not a great cyber thriller. Because it's playing around in a smart sandbox, but it's not very smart. So I'm going to have to say IT kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about that Magnificent Seven and the Hollas. Holla! Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse, Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Continuing with the movie reviews, we're going to roll back to the Old West. Yeehaw! Threw that in there. You got the whip sound that normally shows up in the last segment. That's in honor of Blazing Saddles, which I recently watched because Gene Wilder passed away. And Blazing Saddles is one of the best Westerns out there because it's a deconstruction of Westerns. It's a spoof. But it also kind of makes a fun little story. And in fact, when I'm watching Magnificent Seven, I'm like, hey, it's essentially the story of Blazing Saddles. It's the town of Rockridge. And the people who want to develop the land are trying to knock the people out of Rockridge. And so they run a number six on them. And then the black sheriff comes into town. Not really. He's not a black sheriff. He's like a duly appointed marshal or something like that. But I mean, there's amazing similarities between this version of the Magnificent Seven and Blazing Saddles. It's kind of funny. But anyways, let's talk about the Magnificent Seven. A ragtag posse agrees to help a village in the Old West fight against a dastardly land baron.
How many you got so far?
You and me?
Who's she?
We work for her.
That man murdered my husband.
I want something. I take it.
He will take everything we have.
So you seek revenge?
I seek righteousness. But I'll take revenge.
I need more than a few to help us fight.
What a bunch of misfits we are.
We got seven.
He's got an army.
One of the biggest selling points about the Magnificent Seven to me is it's not this heavy, dour, completely depressing Western. In the modern age, and I'm like talking Unforgiven on, the Westerns that have come out tend to be just really heavy and dour. A movie like Appaloosa, which isn't a bad movie, but Appaloosa is, there's no lightheartedness to it. And when they try to make a fun Western, it's something like The Lone Ranger, which is fun on its own at certain points, but it had some problems. Army Hammer was bad. Johnny Depp's Tonto was a little bit ridiculous. It was too long. But boy, that ending finale of Lone Ranger was one heck of a fun time. And this movie is fun as well. It's a fun Western. Now, it's a serious Western. People get killed, and it's dealing with some serious issues, but it's kind of this iconic Western. It goes to a shoot 'em up. It's a cliched Western, but cliched in a good way. It hits all the tropes that you love seeing in Western movies. It's also very funny. You've got Chris Pratt playing a Chris Pratt-type character, and Denzel Washington and him play off each other really well. Because Denzel sort of plays that, you know, more seasoned, serious, straight man, and Chris Pratt plays the goofball. But they have some very funny moments, and it's very much like the original in the sense that they have very funny moments, but it is quite different. I mean, the setup of the town, you know, in the original it was like a Mexican town, and this one it's a land baron who wants to mine their land, and so he's kicking them off and scaring them away. Again, Blazing Saddles. He's pulling a number six on them. And the assembly of the seven is a little bit different. There's some similarities between some. One of the things that you ran into, especially in the first one, and you get this with this movie as well. Now, I don't know about Seven Samurai, because I've actually not seen that. I'm way behind on my Kurosawa. But I have seen The Magnificent Seven, the 1960 version. And both of them juggle the characters. I mean, in both movies, you get the most development for the main guy, Yul Brynner, in the original. In this one, you've got Denzel Washington. And then you got, like, the sidekick, which was, you know, of course, Steve McQueen in the original and Chris Pratt in this version. But they juggle a lot because you're juggling seven main characters. Plus, you're juggling the people from the town. And then you've got to juggle the bad guy, which is played by Peter Sarsgaard, who does a good job. He actually does a good villain. He's a much better villain than he was in Green Lantern. But he's such a soft kind of guy that his approach to villainy is very different. And I like that choice. But ultimately, The Magnificent Seven is just, it's a fun movie. It's a shoot 'em up. There are a lot of people who get shot in this film. Hayley Bennett playing the woman whose husband gets killed in the beginning, which is not in the original movie, but she's the one who's pushing to get this band to stop the outlaws. She does a good job. She doesn't necessarily steal the show. She's kind of Jennifer Lawrence looking. She looks a lot like Jennifer Lawrence, in my opinion. And I saw her in Hardcore Henry, and I thought that too. She's in a bunch of movies. This is sort of like her year where she got everything stacked into 2016. So she's fine. I think she's good in it. I really like the cast. And you've got like people like Vincent D'Onofrio, who plays somewhat of a bumbling, fun character. And you've got Ethan Hawke, who plays an old sharpshooter from the Civil War. So ultimately, this is a rousing good time. And like I said, everything about it that's cliched Western that will make people who don't like Westerns roll their eyes. But if you like a good Western, it's a lot of fun. Reminds me a bit of Silverado, if you remember that movie from 1986, I think. Last really, really fun Western. So I'm going to have to say, ultimately, The Magnificent Seven rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Hollas. A family gathers for support when their mother is diagnosed with a brain tumor.
What is with you and Dad?
He fired me, John.
I didn't even know you were working for him.
Yeah, you should really call more.
Why does your mom's nurse hate you?
He's married to Gwen.
Gwen, you're Gwen.
Put your dreams away for now.
How's Rebecca?
She's good.
Mom said things haven't been great. Is that why you're not going to get married?
Hi.
Is this a dream?
No.
I like Rebecca. She's pushy.
No.
Men need to be pushed.
Now, that doesn't sound like a comedy, the blurb. But there's a lot of comedy. If you've ever dealt with somebody with good humor who is sick, who has a major illness, you find there's a lot of humor in there. I make fun of any sort of ailment I have. I always end up making fun of it, whether it's a serious ailment or if it's just I've stubbed my toe. But this movie falls into the category I like to call the dysfunctional family film. There's a lot of them out there. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, there was August Osage County, which was all a dysfunctional family movie. But that movie was caustic. And I hated every single person in it. Even the people you're supposed to be sympathetic towards in that movie, I hated. I could not wait till that movie was over. Hated, hated, hated that movie. I think The Hollars feels more like The Family Stone, which was a Christmas movie 10 years ago. And that one had all the characters they fought, and they were weird and... But there was a likability to them. I'm all for dysfunction in movies, as long as it's something like what you would experience in your own life. You know, we got the holidays coming up. You're going to go to Thanksgiving, Christmas, whatever dinner. You're going to run into people. You're going to have people that bicker and fight and annoy each other. Not everybody gets along at a family dinner. But you ultimately love each other. And there's ultimately things you like about the people. You know, like I go to my family dinner. My uncle can be extremely annoying. He's the kind of person who likes to find something that annoys somebody and then pick at it like a scab until it irritates a person. So he can do that. He can be a little hard to handle, but he's a great guy. He really is. It just can be a little bit trying sometimes if you have a little bit too much exposure to him. And that's kind of the way The Hollars is. John Krasinski does a really fine job directing this because he lets them have heart. And it's got a great cast because you got like Richard Jenkins as the dad. You've got Margot Martindale as the mom. And she does both of them do a great job being those judgmental, at times backwards and snappy parents, but also having a real tender side as well. And they'll kind of switch back and forth because we all deal with that with our parents who will suddenly say something that might be kind of cutting and hurt, but they also say things that are very sweet and lovable. And you know that they genuinely care about you, and you can fight with your parents, but hopefully you still know that there's love there. And that's what I really liked about this movie. It has some very funny moments. Great cast. You've got, like I said, Krasinski plays in it. You've got Anna Kendrick in it. You've got Charlton Copley in it. You've got Josh Groban as the would-be suitor to Charlton Copley's ex-wife. There's a lot of truth in it. I found myself laughing. I found myself completely interested. And even though it started out, I was going, oh, God, this is going to be the movie where I just hate everybody. But I didn't. I kind of fell in love with it. So I'm going to have to say that The Hollers rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the horror movies, reviews of Demon and Rob Zombie's 31, plus the box office and the home cinema roundup. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the final segment, and like I'm doing through September, because there's a war on Halloween, I am going after the horror movies early. So let's talk about two of them. One is called Demon, and it's a foreign film. It's mostly in Polish. At a wedding of a couple in Poland, the groom is haunted by visions of a spirit seeking revenge. Sort of a sad story behind it. The director of this movie, he committed suicide very recently as this was playing at a festival. And that's sad because this was getting a lot of buzz. Like, it's a foreign film. It's Polish. It's a little bit heavier. This guy is getting married and he's meeting the family. He kind of goes to this remote area of in Poland and they inherit this house that's kind of falling apart. But there's some nastiness in the history of the house, and he keeps seeing this spirit, and now I've seen it described as a Dubik, which that type of thing has shown up recently in a couple movies, marginally recently, and the movie Possession, which was a couple years ago, not the Zawalski movie from the 70s and early 80s. No, this was either a Warner Brothers movie or a Fox film. It was a sort of this vengeful ghost demon from sort of Jewish tradition. If you remember the movie A Serious Man, which was a Coen Brothers movie several years ago, got nominated for an Academy Award, starts off with the tale of a Dybbuk from the old country with this Jewish family dealing with this Dybbuk coming to haunt them. And that's what this is. This is sort of this vengeful spirit that has an axe to grind. I mean, we see this type of demon and ghost or monster in American movies too. It's the something that has unfulfilled issues that is trying to unleash on the world. This is more of psychological horror, and it balances between if it's really happening or whether this guy's maybe a little bit either schizophrenic or he's hallucinating. You don't know, and it's very ambiguous how it's presented. But it's an interesting movie, and it's creepy. I think that's probably the best way to describe it. It's creepy. It's weird. But ultimately, I'm going to have to say Demon kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Rob Zombie's 31. Rob Zombie directs this grisly tale of a group of traveling carnies who are kidnapped and forced to play a game of survival with murderous clowns.
Tonight, we are going to play 31.
And all you have to do is survive 12 hours.
You say we hunt these freaks down and slit their throats.
Now we have ourselves a game.
Murder school? Oh, it's now in session.
Rob Zombie, he has a great eye. And he has a great vision. He's just not a very good filmmaker. Now, that's not to say I didn't like some of his movies. I actually thought Lords of Salem was kind of interesting. I thought it was a neat movie. And the reason I like Lords of Salem is because even though it still was dark and creepy and it starred Sherry Muzambi, it was a bit of a diversion from his normal just sort of white trash cavalcade that he normally does. This is going right back to it. I think he's trying to make not like a spiritual sequel to The Devil's Rejects. And The Devil's Rejects was good for what it was. especially for its cinematography and the approach to the movie, kind of very Peckinpah-ish. Much better than House of a Thousand Corpses. But of course, his Halloween movies were terrible. This one, I see what he's trying to do. It's a relatively simple thing. Like I said, it's just people who capture others, put them in this sort of maze, and then have these killer clowns try and torture and murder them. The problem is Zombie just doesn't know how to create likable characters at all. Not even in the least. I thought as I'm watching the movie that these carnies were going to be the bad guys because they were all just sleazy and unappealing and kind of gross and unredeeming. And then they get captured. And I'm like, oh, they're the victims. Whoops. But that's very typical of Zombie. I mean, even if you look at the Halloween movies that he made, the good guys in those movies are sleazy and seedy. And with the original Halloween, there was that purity of Laurie Strode. And that's where the fear was, that it's just this average, nice person. And then the whole thing is this sweet little kid in the suburbs goes bonkers and kills his sister. And that was the heart of what made Halloween so scary. He just made it a abused kid from some white trash family. And you're just like, well, I can see where that could happen. There's nothing terribly scary overtly about that. It's just unpleasant. And that's kind of the way this movie was. You were in a heyday for clowns. I mean, we're in such a heyday for clowns that there are stories about people dressing up as clowns and really causing problems in some communities, actually threatening people as opposed to just walking around looking creepy, which I support that. I love creepy clowns, but don't, you know, threaten to kill people. That's where you're going to cross a line. But clowns are really big, and we've got clown movies. You've got a remake of It coming. You've got the movie Clown came out a couple months ago. We've got Clown Town I'm going to be talking about next week. Clowns are very popular as a horror element. But I don't think they're barely clowns in this movie. They're wearing clown stuff, but there's nothing. They're just crazy people with makeup on, as opposed to being in character. So I think Zombie really misses the boat on this. Now, they release this as a one-night-only Fathom event earlier in September, and I caught it then, and it's on demand now, and supposedly I think they're going to go to put it back in theaters like a week or two before Halloween. So if you're a big fan of Zombie and you love Devil's Rejects, you're going to get some more of that there. But you're still dealing with Sherry Moon Zombie as the good guy, and she's awful. So I'm going to have to say Rob Zombie's 31 kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Was I correct? Last week I said Sully was going to be around 20 to 25 million in a horse race with Blair Witch. I was kind of right in the sense that Sully did do extremely well. It had less than a 40% drop. I think its drop was 37%, which is unheard of. That is a amazing hold for a movie. And in fact, it came in with almost 22 million, and Blair Witch and then Bridget Jones's Baby and Snowden all came in under 10 million. It was a horse race between those three. And then Sully was almost as much as the three of them combined. And then Let Hope Rise by Hillsong didn't even make the top 10. It was a terrible week for opening movies, and that's a shame because I like Bridget Jones's Baby. I'm kind of glad that Blair Witch didn't do terribly well because I don't want to see a sequel every year of it. I kind of liked this one encapsulated version of it. But Sully, it was great to see that one repeat. Now, this week, The Magnificent Seven is getting confusing tracking. I've seen people saying it's going to go as low as low 20s, and I've seen predictions up to $40 million. I think it's going to be somewhere in the 30s. It may push 40 million. And here's why. I mean, it's getting some mixed reviews, and it's also not a big movie. It's not like a big summer movie. But here's the thing. Antoine Fuqua, when he pairs with Denzel Washington, they do very well. The Equalizer was 30-some million its opening weekend a couple years ago. And that's because of Antoine Fuqua and Denzel Washington. They work well together. September's a great time to open a Denzel Washington movie. They tend to do very well then in September and in January. You see that. So you got both of them together. And then you throw in Chris Pratt, who has a huge mainstream appeal. Denzel and Fuqua are going to bring out the African-American audience. They just do. And Chris Pratt helps make the movie a broader scope. And I think you put those in the mix together and you've got a hit. It's not going to do over 40, I don't think, but it's going to have a really good solid weekend, because there's really nothing out there. I mean, you got Sully, but that action-oriented audience, they don't have anything out there. The last thing that was really big back a couple weeks ago was Don't Breathe for that audience, and now that audience is getting something now that they've gone through the Don't Breathe section. And then, and I don't think Storks is going to do well because it's too hard to digest. It's so high concept and bizarre. And it's not like Secret Life of Pets, which is easy to wrap your brain around. There's no minions. There's no familiar characters. And it's not even a really great voice cast. I think that Storks is going to be pretty low, too, like low 20s. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Beauty and the Beast, the 25th anniversary Blu-ray. They did a Blu-ray about 10 years ago, but now they've got the Diamond Edition 25th anniversary Blu-ray, a big release, which is great. One of the Disney's, actually one of the best animated films from that series. You had Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, 1-2 Punch was amazing. Forget Lion King. Beauty and the Beast is the one to go for. Tons of special features on the new Blu-ray. It's definitely worth checking out. If you don't have it already, get it. It's going to go back in the vault. You won't see it for another 8 or 10 years. So check it out now while you can. A couple other ones, you've got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows, which was a bit of a bomb. So was Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising. And then Free State of Jones, which is also kind of a bit of a bomb, but that one was a decent movie. It just kind of ran a little bit long and was a little bit too button pushy. And that's it. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, Masterminds, and Deepwater Horizon. But until then, have a fat time at the movies.